Back in the studio today, I'm really excited. We're going to have J.P. Harvey, Lieutenant of the K-9 Unit of Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. He's going to be with me. Kelly's going to join us in the studio also. And we're just going to have a conversation about leadership, some things we've learned over the past several weeks. We've both been in the classroom. We've both been interacting with students. And we just got some lessons we want to share with you today. So I'm so excited to be able to do that. So folks, as we always say, sit back, turn up that volume, and today for sure, get ready to change your life. Hi, I'm Dean Crisp. Welcome to Straight Talk on Leadership. This is what we'd like to say is the no BS zone, where we give you leadership tips, ideas, and practical suggestions to help you become a top leadership performer. Our goal is simple. Help you become the best version of yourself and reach your highest potential as a leader. So sit back, turn up the volume, get ready to change your life. Hey folks, Dean Crisp, as promised, I'm in the studio today. Kelly's actually on location in our office in Asheville today. And J.P. Harvey, who is going to be joining us, a lieutenant with the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, who also teaches for LHLN, teaches on the road for us. He just got back from Hershey, Pennsylvania. I just got back from Bristol, Virginia. And we've got three locations going today for our podcast. So I hope you're going to enjoy our interaction as well as our conversation, because we're going to talk about some things that we've kind of learned, some things that we've had conversations while we're teaching, things that we've seen, things that we've learned that we're going to pass on to you. I hope you're really going to enjoy. So before we get started, though, I want to thank everybody out there for joining our podcast every single week. I know we say this, but our numbers keep going up. I am constantly getting emails, text, calls. Talked to an individual today that really just kind of out of the blue called me up and said, just want to let you know that podcast is really helping me out. Kind of gets me started every day, you know, when I go out there and listen to them in the gym or working out. And I want to thank all of you for taking the time out of your day to spend with us. And we hope we're going to provide lessons for you or just information about leadership, give you something to think about. You know, I've always said that leadership is a lifestyle. It's not something you can turn on and off at 9 o'clock in the morning and turn off at 5 o'clock. If you're going to be good at it, you got to make it a part of your lifestyle. And so with that being said, I want to welcome our folks in. JP, Kelly, good to have you today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
JP, if you don't know, I'm going to let JP tell a little bit about himself so that you folks kind of realize where he's coming from. And so, JP, go ahead, take it away. Tell us a little bit about yourself for the folks who may not know you, kind of get to know you.
Sure, absolutely. So I am a lieutenant with the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. I have the distinct honor and privilege to command our K-9 unit. To put it into perspective, we have a pretty large agency, about 4,000 sworn officers, including corrections and law enforcement. In our K-9 unit, we have 56 dogs. So that's about 29 on patrol, and the rest are in ancillary units doing different types of detection work. We run the full gamut from search and rescue to human remains with a cadaver dog. We have narcotic explosive detection dogs. We have dogs that can find currency and firearms, ammunition, things of that nature. The only thing we're not doing yet is any type of digital detection for computer forensic stuff. But we got our hands full. Absolutely, when you have that many dogs and that many handlers, you have that many opportunities to grow through things that happen. So pretty busy there. I've been with the sheriff's office for about 17 years. I started my career in the town of Palm Beach. I did a couple of years there and realized that I needed a larger sandbox, but had a great experience there. I moved to South Florida to start my career in law enforcement. I was one of the kids that grew up in the 80s and 90s watching Cops. And I knew that South Florida had a lot of opportunities for somebody full of energy like myself. So I moved down here, went through the academy. It's been a storybook career. Before K-9, I've been blessed with a lot of different assignments to include our community policing unit, sort of like a street team or a highly aggressive enforcement unit that also embraces the community policing philosophy and helps out people in communities that are designated as community policing sites, a little bit different than what Herman Goldstein had in mind, but that's how we did it. And I was a motorcycle deputy, promoted to sergeant, spent some time on SWAT. I was a detective sergeant in our special investigation. Opportunity to get pretty well-rounded. And when I became a sergeant, I knew that I really wanted to make a difference in people's lives. I'd had a lot of examples in the military, being an Army veteran, of what good leadership was, but also leadership that wasn't so good. I saw those same things in law enforcement. So when I became a sergeant, I really wanted to be an impactful leader. I knew that we did a really good job of creating supervisors and managers, but I would have to put some work in to be a step above. And that's where I found myself today. After having taught in the academy for a couple of years, about 10 of them, kind of graduated up. And as I have moved on in my leadership journey, I've found an opportunity and a way to share that stuff. So that's just what I'm really excited about. And it's kind of what has gotten me to where I am today.
Well, now, JP, one of the things you didn't mention is I believe you got 2 master's degrees. So you're definitely an overachiever, that's for sure. And so tell me why you got 2 master's degrees.
Because I'm a knucklehead. I didn't know when to stop the pain. So what had happened was we have a fantastic agency for many different ways. We have a really great agency here at the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. Our tuition reimbursement was fantastic. I had gone to a small school in New Hampshire, earned my undergraduate degree. I double majored in English and communication studies. And I quickly realized that if I wanted to get promoted and take the supervisory route, that I needed to educate myself, in part because I wanted to have the intellectual capital. But the other part of it was you got 5 points for having a graduate degree in a promotion process. Now, at our agency, tenths of a point are separating people. And from first to 10th place in the promotional process may only be separated by 2 points. So,
I got you.
Yeah. So for me, it was a no-brainer. Listen, they're going to pay $5,000 a year in tuition reimbursement. If I spread this thing out over a few years, they'll pay the whole thing. So I thought it'd be kind of foolish not to take advantage of that. So I earned a degree in public administration, my MPA, and from Berry University in Miami, Florida, and was good to go. Said I finished my capstone project. I'm never doing another paper again. I'm done. Well, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. So next thing I know, I get promoted, and very early on in my first year of being a sergeant, I got selected to attend the officer administrative course at the University of Louisville for SPI, for Southern Police Institute. And that was a huge moment for me because I went up there and quickly found that there's so much to learn. I refer to that as a school of why. They really get into why do we do the things that we do in policing, from patrol strategies and a whole lot of other things, much different than the FBI NA, which is an academy. This is basically graduate school. So I went up there, I had a great experience, and I left SPI and came back home and was able to take a few more classes online, and I was able to transfer a couple of classes for my first graduate degree in. And I looked at the big picture and I said, well, if everybody else is getting a graduate degree, how do I separate myself from others to move forward in my career? So I figured I'd get a second graduate degree. And I have one for public administration. And my second degree from Louisville is in a Master of Science in Criminal Justice. So I like to think that I have a pretty good snapshot of the smaller circle of law enforcement, but the bigger picture of how we interact with other government agencies and how we fit in with both city managers and being able to work with other elected officials. So that was the mindset there. No need at this point for a PhD. I quickly learned that looking at that, I might actually handcuff myself a little bit because not only is a Master in Public Administration, considered a terminal degree in this line of work. When you start looking at down the road, if I were to ever want to be a chief or take a position like that, and I'm being hired by a city manager, they in all likelihood don't have a PhD and may see that as competition down the road, and you might limit yourself a little bit. So,
well, it sounds like you're very strategic in your thought process regarding, you know, not only your own career, but your own certainly your own personal development. Well, JP and I met, if you're wondering our connection, we met several years ago when I was teaching an FBI leader class in Palm Beach, Florida. And, you know, in the class, it was very obvious that JP was one of those folks that, you know, it's kind of like, I want people to realize this about leadership, because it's something that a lot of people don't understand about leadership is that every person who's a leader carries a culture around them. And that culture, and if you really get in and talk about what culture is kind of like your behaviors, your kind of accepted things that you do. It's kind of like what people feel from you. It's like, you know, as well as I do, that there are memos that come out, and then anytime inside of our agency, our culture can kill the effectiveness of that memo, if you will, because it either chooses to do it or not, or to halfway do it or not. But every leader carries this culture around them. And JP's culture was one that is very open, very much want to push your own development. You could see that you were seeking to kind of be your best, at your best. And if you think about it, think about any leader or any person you've ever been around, they do carry that kind of aura or that culture around them. And don't forget that as a leader, that you really need to realize that people have these senses about them that picks that stuff up, whether you want to believe that or not. People are picking up what you're laying down. And a lot of times that's a culture. I could see that in JP, and it was obvious in our discussions that he wanted to push himself to the next level. And so we kept our relationship going, and then JP attended a couple of the classes we did, and you could just see that fire to really want to get better and to push himself forward. And one thing JP does is, which is really hard for people to kind of do, but you've got that natural, I don't know that you have a natural ability, but you have a natural desire to read stuff. So I'm not saying reading comes natural. Certainly it doesn't come natural to me, but that desire of curiosity is very obvious about you. And there's one thing you got to realize about curiosity. When curiosity motivates you to move forward, then it's a very positive curiosity. And when curiosity doesn't create that motivation to move forward, it can really be kind of devastating, because you're always lazy in your curiosity. That's where I want people to realize that, you know, curiosity is good, but are you lazy in your curiosity? And what I mean by that is, do you just Google an answer and then you're done, or do you take it to the next level to really get a deeper understanding of that curiosity? And I saw that in JP. And as a result, you took the master level presenter course in Asheville, and we started talking about you pushing it forward. Hey, and this past week, you are actually on your own teaching in Hershey, Pennsylvania, to a class of intentional leadership leaders. And man, that must have been kind of a good experience for you, from all of the indications from the class and from the chief and everything. Man, you hit a home run up there. But so tell me about that. So tell me about, like, what you learned about yourself, pushing yourself that far out of your comfort zone, because it's not easy. Now, you can go teach for an hour somewhere. You can go give a stump speech. You can go give 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 hours, even a day. But when you got almost 3 days in front of police leaders, that's a little intimidating. So tell me about that.
Yeah, well, first I have to touch back on natural ability. I always joke when I do my math, I call it infantry math, because, you know, I was in the infantry in the Army, and there's a reason for that. I didn't really have an opportunity to go do some nuclear science stuff. But, you know, so I think I'm the poster child for effort trumps talent. And I just remember growing up that constantly being instilled in me that you know, it's your attitude, not your aptitude, that will determine your altitude, as Zig Ziglar says. And I think that's awesome, because if you're willing to put the work in and you understand the business side of things and you put the time in, you can get better. I had ADHD growing up. They just called it ADD. They didn't have the H part in it. I took medicine for it. And I'm the type of person that I need to literally read things 2 and 3 times just to start getting an understanding of it. So I don't think that I have a natural ability, but I certainly do have that natural curiosity. And I think that's awesome, because when I start reading things from a curiosity standpoint, it allows me to be more transformational as I read material. And what I mean by that is I'm not just reading something to take a test, looking for the dates, looking for, you know, material that might be good test questions. I want to know the bigger picture. You know, I really want to know, you know, stuff about it. So curiosity is good for that. Man, Hershey was an awesome trip. I had a really good time and I learned a ton. You hit the nail on the head about really being prepared, and it can be a little overwhelming knowing that you're teaching for 2.5 days. And when you look at the slide deck, the PowerPoint that we go out and teach with, it's only about 35 slides. It's not a ton of, it's a ton of material, but we're not doing death by PowerPoint. So going to Hershey was excellent. I had a really good opportunity. I personally grew a ton. I can't give enough thanks to the host, Chief Warner up there, and Lieutenant Roche. We had a great time. They showed me around the town. I got to take part not only in the class, but they really brought me in. I got to see a swearing-in ceremony, which was really neat, because our swearing-in ceremonies are, you know, just so big and large and so many things happening. To go see a couple of people in a small town get in front of council, I thought was a really cool thing. But what I found myself learning most about that trip was how important intellectual capital is. It's one thing to get in front of the class, like Dean had just said, to give a stump speech or even a couple of hours to present somewhere. But when you're standing in front of some seasoned officers that have, you know, almost everybody in the class has 20 years experience for 2.5 days, and you look at your slide deck and you have 35 slides, you better know what you're talking about, or you're going to be toast. So it was a big confidence boost for me, because as I read and constantly trying to get better and trying to improve my game, it gave me an opportunity to really see that, all that, sorry, I'm working. It was good to see that my efforts have paid off, and that intellectual capital gave me an opportunity to create conversations with people, which helped me relate with them and really lead with the relationships that we were making in the classroom, instead of being transactional with our material, where we're just hitting bullet points and death by PowerPoint.
What's interesting is that, you know, you and I had several conversations just in the mornings, and only to, you know, make sure we were just getting through, not so much the material, but connectivity. Because one of the things we talk about in the classroom in terms of leadership, and that's what I want to kind of hit on there for a second, is that the power of connecting with leadership, how that really works. And we try to use the classroom as, you know, a laboratory. We always say that, you know, right here is where you actually practice leadership and you kind of get to use it and see it. And you can see that leadership kind of coming through in a classroom, where you can take people that maybe are there for, you know, they all want to get better. But one of the things that we really try to do in those classrooms is to get actually people better, which is exactly what we want to do with the podcast, is we want to talk about our own personal journeys of getting better and pushing ourselves to that level. And you kind of had one of those moments where before it starts out, it's like every leader experiences this when they have really tough decisions, or they have a really daunting task ahead, or they're going to make decisions that literally impact people's lives. There's that moment of pause where you're like, you know, am I doing the right thing? Am I really pushing myself forward? So you know, share that with our listeners about where you're ready to go in the classroom. Then all of a sudden it hits you, man, I'm leading. Everybody has had that moment in their life, I'm sure. So take us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I, let me go a step back in time. When I came to Canine 3 years ago, you know, you all have canine programs where you work as you listen. You know that canine people are special people, the dog handlers. We got some a rough, tough crew. I mean, they got their ball caps up sitting high on their head. Half of them have a mouthful of tobacco, arms folded, foot up on the wall, looking at me as I came to introduce myself as the new commander. And I quickly realized that it was relationships that I was going to build with people that was going to help us, you know, turn a page and move in the direction that we were going to go in. When I got into the classroom, you know, you look and people come to class and different students have different expectations, but a lot of times people are real quiet and people aren't just opening up and sharing themselves. We have to create an environment for that to happen. And how you do that, you know, one of my big takeaways and why I share now with you, Dean, on this is hopefully people listen. It might be beneficial to somebody out there. But it's really about leading with relationships, not leading with the material. And it goes, when I heard that in one of your earlier classes, I thought, man, I was effective as an instructor at the police academy, but had I really understood that more, I would have been much more effective because I found myself trying to push through material, trying to cover, hit the points on the PowerPoint, hit those bullet points. But if I had led more with the relationship and I had taken the time to get to know the recruits a little bit better, I could have used examples and analogies that would tie the material back to in a way that they could understand it. And that would make the material come alive. So in Hershey, we had that. And a perfect example was, I was referring back to a Ziegler podcast where they were talking about personal growth. And if you're serious about personal growth, Tom Ziegler asked the question where he says, I like to ask people the question, what are the 5 books you read last over the past 3 months? And I read a lot. I don't know that I read 5 books every 3 months. It takes me a little bit longer, but I started thinking about that. And his point was, but if you ask people what TV shows they're into, what series they're following, they're able to give you multiple answers. And I was explaining that in class and I got a lot of, you know, just blank stares back. And I didn't want to be the reading police, but I was trying to make the point that it's really important to read. And if you want to grow and get better, that maybe if we traded out some of our TV time for reading time, that would be so beneficial. But Dean, if you remember the conversation we had Wednesday morning, we were talking about that. I mean, it was 7:46 in the morning and I had a kaboom moment. One of those moments that literally changed the trajectory of my leadership journey. And you told me, you said, listen, JP, you really have a strong grasp on what it means to be transactional versus transformational in the leadership concept. So when you're transactional, you're leading by your rank, by position of authority. Because I said so, I've earned my time and I've earned this rank. Do as I say, don't ask questions. And there's certainly a time for that type of leadership in law enforcement, for example, on a critical incident. But on the flip side, if the listeners aren't familiar with this, on the flip side, you have transformational leadership, which is really starting with the why. It's understanding the big picture of what we're doing. It's getting buy-in from people by explaining and starting with why, with a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. It's almost seeing things from a higher elevation, that 500-foot view instead of the ground view. And not only is that concept important in leadership, but it transcends. When people come into a classroom, we have transactional learners. And one of our jobs to be a good instructor and to be a good leader in the classroom, which carries out to being a good canine commander or a good patrol sergeant, is learning to be transformational in how we teach and making those sharing those war stories, not for the sake of telling a war story, but for the sake of tying that story into the material to make the material realistic, relevant, recent, to make it come alive. And we had that moment in Hershey. We didn't have it in the moment when I was talking about the Tom Ziegler podcast, but when you and I spoke about that the following moment, the light bulb went off for me. When I say I had a kaboom moment, the light bulb really went off. And I realized that I had started, I didn't tie in enough of why that was important. And I realized that when people aren't reading, and I've taught a bunch of classes with you now, and I've traveled solo to Hershey and I've co-taught a bunch of classes. And when we ask, like, hey, have you read, Start With Why by Simon Sinek, you might get a hand or two out of 20. But then when you start asking some of the not as well-known books, not a lot of people are reading out there. And you had made the point that stuck with me is, why is that, JP? And the answer is because when people read, when people get home, they want to be entertained. They watch the TV shows because they're entertaining. But when they read sometimes from that transactional mind frame, mindset. They're not reading it, to see what the bigger picture is. They're pushing through like it's a chore. So I had a big epiphany that not only does transformational and transactional apply to leadership, but it can apply to how we learn, how I read books, and also how we teach in the classroom. But then even way outside of the scope of the podcast, but how am I interacting with my children? It just covers so many different areas. So for me, that kind of really blew my mind.
Well, there's a couple of things I want to expand on that. And so first of all, you got to remember this, and let's talk about it from the reading standpoint. If I'm going to take a promotional examination and they say, read X book, X book, X book, you can guarantee that is a complete transactional leadership reading moment, which means that that person is going to read that book for test-taking purposes only, which creates read it, get something out of it for the test, and then move forward. That's the transactional part, no question about it. When you do that, though, you don't learn a lot. You read a lot, but you don't learn a lot. When you get a relationship with a book and you start seeing that from a couple of things help you do this. One, I'm going to share it. That forms transformational for sure. Secondarily, I am going to not only share it, but I'm going to teach it. And then I'm going to act upon it. Those three things create a transformational relationship with a book. And if you look at those things, it's like, I'm going to share it, I'm going to teach it, and then I'm going to act upon it. You get a reason to form a relationship with a book. And I know this sounds weird, but when you form a relationship with a book, it totally comes transformational. It never becomes transactional. And most people in leadership roles have to understand that they're forcing these people to read these books, and they don't give them the reason to read the book. Now, let me talk about transformational leadership for 1 second. Transformational leadership starts with explaining the why before they ask. If you explain the why before they ask, you are actually leading in a transformational way, because you are automatically beginning to create trust with that individual, which in turn, trust creates a connectivity that you cannot fake, and you cannot not produce good results when there's trust. And so when you look at that, it's the same thing in the classroom. I tell people this: you create transformational moments in the classroom through connection. Because if people begin to connect with you, it gives them a reason to believe what you're teaching will have an impact on them. If they don't believe that, it does not matter. And so you really got to understand that. And I think that was a kaboom moment for both of us, from the standpoint of when you have a lot of people who walk into a classroom, they are in a transactional mode. They've already got their mind made up. All I'm here for is certificate. I'm here because somebody told me to do it. And they don't ever form a relationship with the material. They don't ever form a relationship with the instructor. They don't ever form a relationship with other students in the classroom, which prevents them from having transformational moments in the classroom. And so, what we try to do in our classrooms is we try to have transformational moments always, whether it's via relationship or just like what you said, explaining the material better with Zig Ziglar. When you said, he says, name the top 5 books, but I bet you can name the top 5 TV shows you watch it. Well, the reason is because you don't generally watch those TV shows by yourself. You watch them with somebody else, which creates a relationship, which in turn gives you a reason to discuss it, which in turn gives you a reason tomorrow to talk about it at the damn water cooler. And so it creates conversational tone. If we would find reasons to act to throw our books that we're reading into our conversations, then you would have a much more transformational relationship with the books and things that you're reading. Reading is not simply to be a task. Reading is simply to change your life. And if you're not using that in everything you read, I'm talking about entertainment, I'm talking about with, you know, things on how to, whatever it may be, you're using that material to transform your life to be better. And if you're not, you've got a transactional relationship with it, and that's it. And you just don't expect any more. So, Kelly, do you want to make a point?
Well, I think that this is a great conversation. I was in the class last week in Bristol, Virginia, where Dean was teaching master leadership, which has become probably, I mean, you've experienced it, JP. And so, you know, as a fact that it's really a very transformational class in and of itself. But Dean actually introduced this Wednesday morning, probably right after you guys talked about it. And it was amazing. I mean, the kaboom moments that went off for me, just having watched children go through the K-12 system, as well as just having seen several of our students basically interact with the material from a transactional standpoint versus a transformational standpoint. One of the things I will say, having done business development now for 4 years for us, is that, and I tell this to the audience as a knowledge, there's a lot of people doing leadership development out there, but they select instructors based on status. A lot of times we select them based on their willingness to not only interact with the student and produce a connection, but also their intellectual curiosity. And you're seeing that right here with JP. All of our other instructors are different personalities, but they have a similar desire to learn and grow themselves and to own their leadership, if I guess is the best way I would say it. And so just keep that in mind. When you do experience one of our classes, that's what you're going to get, is an instructor that really does care that you take something of value away from that class. So that's what I
had to say. Well, thank you, Kelly. I appreciate that. And JP, so what, you know, I want to mention one other thing about transactional versus transformational. And I think that a lot of us get caught up in transactional relationships with our spouses or the people that are close with us. And you start wondering why you start falling apart, because the relationship becomes transactional, which means, hey, you get up, go to bed, buy groceries, pay the bills, you know, get in a car and ride each other, go to lunch, don't have a conversation, stay on your damn phones. I mean, before you know it, you're just going through the motions. When you go through the motions in a relationship, it becomes very transactional. And there's one thing certainly about transactional. In transactional relationships, you certainly look for the end. You don't look for the beginning, and you never look for the end. Transformational, you look for the growth, not the end. And so I think that's the interesting thing about when you look at relationships and even at workplace. And one of the things people do is this is something that I want to take this a step further, where people understand this is that you develop a transformational or transactional relationship with your place of work. When it just becomes a place of work, it becomes very transactional. All you do is you get money for it. Then you get, you know, you don't get any benefit from it personally. You don't find your purpose anymore. You just kind of go through the motions. And I will tell you this, there is no place that's ever going to pay you what you're really worth. And I'm talking about as a person. And the only way you keep that relationship strong is that it transforms, where you're able to develop your own your own purpose, your own why in life. When you're able to do that, then you get a transformational relationship with the place at work. When you lose that, man, you're in trouble. And when you're in trouble, you can see very quickly, a lot of people out there have a transactional relationship with work. They start at 8, they finish at 5, they go home, they don't think about it, they don't do anything else. They just do what they got to do. And so you look at, it's not only in the classroom, it's anywhere in our life. Are we transactional with the stuff we're doing, or do we have a transformational relationship with what we're trying to accomplish?
I agree 100%.
So anyway, so, you know, we need to probably find a transition point with that.
One thing I wanted to add about, like, going back to the reading part, was that what was transformational for me in my growth journey was when Dean had, you know, told me, as you're reading and preparing for class, start reading material, because, you know, start drawing material from the material, start reading it because you're going to teach it, you know, read it to teach it back. And that really changed the way that I read it, because, you know, I knew that I had to be fully committed and invested in what I was reading. And it just an interesting point for me, and a moment of growth where, you know, I found myself learning to read books and read material differently, because I knew I was looking for things to share and to add value to the classes we were teaching.
Now, I think that's a really good point, JP. I mean, reading is a very important part of my life, but I think that it's great that we are so invested in that as a company to actually continue to grow and learn, and that we encourage our people to do that. That's really why we created the network we did. So glad to hear you say that. And did you have any, I'm just curious, like when you were in Hershey, were there any standout stories that you heard from students or that you experienced while you were in class there or in some of the other classes you've taught?
Well, I think a couple of things come to mind. So for me, probably the biggest takeaway I had from Hershey was the relationships that I built. I kind of got dividends immediately on that. I got some great feedback after the class. And, you know, being somebody who's fairly new to going out on the road and teaching, and I don't have the experience that obviously that you do, that you have, Dean. And sometimes when you hear people walk into a classroom or in the beginning of a podcast, get ready to change your life, you know, sometimes with that fixed mindset, you can have your walls up a little bit and say, really, that's a pretty bold statement. But what I've taken away from not only here, but when we were in outside of Nashville, in Mount Juliet recently, you know, the feedback and the connections that I make with people, you quickly realize that you are changing people's lives, that you really are adding value to people's lives. When you have somebody with significant rank in a department outside of Nashville pulls me aside in the hallway, and we're talking about what type of leader do you want to be? What's the legacy that you hope to leave? And when that individual pulls me aside and says, I'm realizing through this class that I haven't been the leader that I hoped that I would have been, do you think it's too late for me to change my legacy? With a tear in their eye, I mean, I got throw bumps. I call them not goosebumps. I call them throw bumps. I got throw bumps as I'm telling you the story now. That's impactful. That's meaningful. When Dean and I were up in New England, and you know, we went out to lunch with a couple of people in the class, and they offered a very genuine prayer of giving thanks for the opportunity to have us share what we've learned with them. Those are the real meaningful things. I had, you know, to our earlier point, somebody from Hershey reached out and they sent me an email after the class, and they said, we were discussing this class at work the following day, and I couldn't help but think of the quote from Steve Jobs, and that's, true creativity comes from random meetings and spontaneous conversations. Well, two things there. If they're talking about the class after the class around the water cooler, that's a pretty good sign. We're making an impact. The second thing is that quote, you know, true creativity comes from random meetings and spontaneous conversations. That's where the magic happens. His point furthermore was, yep, we can read a book, we can watch a video, but when you get inside that classroom and you're having that, you know, transformational relationship with people and you're making the material come alive, within those moments, conversations just happen. And we start talking about things, it goes in different directions. That's where a lot of the real value starts adding into the classes. You know, those are some of the big takeaways. The final big takeaway I'll get comes back from Tennessee. And we were talking about a whole lot of different things. And I realized that we were making a huge difference. And what was rewarding and gratifying for me was we were talking about leading with relationships and having relationships with people. And why is it that, you know, some of our sergeants and lieutenants and captains, some of our supervisors are more like supervisors and less like leaders. And what I mean is that they, you know, what I've seen in South Florida is we tend to do a really good job of creating supervisors. We understand what to do and we understand how to do it, but having bosses that are leaders that understand and share the why makes all the difference. And we're talking with a person in class that didn't really have a lot to say. They're being very quiet. And in fact, they even said, hey, this guy, he didn't say anything for the first couple of years that he was here. And as a supervisor, I got to know him a little bit more. And it turns out that he had worked on the west coast of the country for many years and had gone to the current department that he's at now. And he was involved in a very, very serious critical incident. And I kind of had the epiphany from a mental health standpoint that, you know, maybe sometimes people in our line of work don't share and open up as much as we would like or think they should, because they're dealing with some of the things that they've been affected by from working on this job for so long. And what I took from that, you know, from, you know, how can I learn and grow from it? This whole thing of me trying to get better and go out and teach and share my leadership journey is selfishly, I want to be the best that I can be. And I'm looking for things within these lessons. And for me, I took away, you know, we really have to take care of ourselves and do what we can do between having hobbies and things like that to be balanced. And I catch myself at times getting burnt out every so often. And the biggest cure for burnout is personal growth. So I pick up a book and I dive into it and I read it in a way that I can share that with other people. And, you know, Dean loves the analogy in class. He uses it frequently about filling cups up and who's going to fill your cup up. So by reading and in my personal growth, I get to fill my cup up. It's so rewarding to be able to share that information with other people. But those are a few of the takeaways. I can go on forever. I tend to talk a lot sometimes, but
Well, no, and I think you're making great points. The one thing I want to mention is our classroom experience is a little bit different from most because it's not so much the material we have is really, really good. I'll put it up against anybody, but it's what we try to get out of you is that what really makes the difference. Like we try to get you to have a self-evaluative look that you may not have ever taken before. And that really is what you've got to do in order to be better is you got to know where you are now. A lot of people go into a classroom and they are looking forward so much, they don't stop enough to look where they're at now. And what they do is try to create good habits after bad habits. And good habits after bad habits, just kind of, they're not really that effective. What you got to do is stop bad habits and create better habits or good habits to really make an impact. Because a lot of people just try to make, you know, cover their bad habits up with some good habits. And so that's very transactional. I think a lot of people are very transactional in their own relationship with themselves. And what I mean by that is that we get dependent on others to do for us when it's really about us doing for ourselves. And when you are very transactional within yourself, you stop your growth. You just keep doing the same things over and over again and think that is success. One of the biggest transactional mistakes that everybody makes, and I'm not speaking for like everybody in the world, but I know I'm speaking for law enforcement because I've done it for 40 years and I understand it and I see it and I understand it. The biggest transactional mistake that anybody will ever make is believing that the organization is responsible for their personal growth. And when they believe that the organization is responsible for your personal growth, that is a quintessential transactional mindset that will do nothing but drop you like a bad habit. Because what you'll find is that the organization will always have somebody else they'll pick instead of you. The organization will always favor somebody else for whatever the circumstances are. Most organizations are never very planned or strategic. They are always impulsive. It's always who's the favor right now that gets the job. It's always who's got the best input or the ear of the chief or the sheriff or whoever at that moment. They're never very forthright in their strategy. And so that's number one. That's transactional. It means you think the organization is responsible for your personal growth. That's the biggest mistake ever. The second transactional mistake that most people make, and this is the killer, is they believe that hope is a strategy. Hope is not a strategy. Hope will leave you in the lurch. Now, we got to have hope. And we don't ever want to lose hope. You got to always have it. But if you use that as a strategy, you will more times than not go away completely empty-handed and completely disappointed. Hope is not a strategy. That is very transactional. And so what you've got to do is you've got to be able to transform yourself and take personal growth as a responsibility of yourself. I told this to people many times when they got promoted. They'll say, they used always think, and I probably promoted, I don't know, 75, 50, 100 people maybe or more. And most all of them will tell me, thank you for the promotion. I always say to them, this had nothing to do with me. This has everything with you earning the right. Because if you believe in transactional promotions to the point where I promoted you because you were the one that, you know, was just to be promoted, then you are very transactional. What that will do is do one thing for me for sure. If you believe that, then I will have to help you stay promoted. But if you believe you've earned the right to be promoted, then you will keep earning that right every day. And you'll do the things that you need to do. And so a lot of people don't do that. And so when I look at leadership and look at this, you know, if the more transactional you are in your own personal relationship with yourself, the more you're going to stay exactly where you are. If you don't like your seat on the bus, then get transformative and help yourself move it. Now, you might not control all the levers, you know, you might not control all that stuff that makes that work. But there's one thing for certain, you know, you can take the choices out of their hands by being the most prepared and the most ready. And that's all you can do. And that is a transformational. When a person says, I'm going to be the best version of myself today, that is very transformative. When they basically get up and say, same old, you can bet they have a transactional relationship with themselves. Or another day in paradise. Well, congratulations. You just convinced me you've got a transactional relationship with yourself. And guess what's going to happen? Tomorrow, the exact same thing. So just get ready for it. And the only thing that changes you is your transformational relationship with yourself. And you got to realize personal growth will do it. And don't ever think that an organization is responsible for your personal growth. It is not. You are responsible for it. So I do want to mention a couple of things that I kind of had in the classroom. There was a couple of things that a couple of students said last week. I was teaching the master leadership course in Bristol, Virginia / Tennessee. And that's an interesting city if you've never been there. It's actually the Tennessee side claims to be the home of country music. And because back in the early days, they used to have these record sessions where they would actually bring a tape recorder down and a bunch of folks came out of the hills and was playing bluegrass and music. And it became kind of, they started calling it country music. And it kind of started there early in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And it is an interesting, a wonderful town and some great folks there. And in the mountains, it's so beautiful in the mountains there. I just love it. And Tim Tester, who's in charge of the Southwestern Virginia Criminal Justice Academy. What a great guy. I loved him and all of his staff there. Just had a great time in the classroom with them last week. Had a full house of students, and it was just a great week. But a couple of things they said, one of them particularly said when they were giving their presentations, I wrote down a couple of things. One of them said, life is like a vapor. It's here one moment, and in another, it's gone. I thought, wow, that is so impactful. You know, it's like, how impactful was that? So, I thought, and Melissa, who was head of the dispatch unit down there in Southwest Virginia, she said something. She said, bad things that happen in our life, they go away just like bad dreams do. And I thought, boy, that is so true. You know, if you just realize the moment you're in might really look bad, but just like anything else, it'll go away, just like bad dreams do. And I thought, man, you know, that's just such good stuff right there, you know. And those are just a few kind of, you know, quotes that people said in the classroom. And this one kid got up and talked about this poem. And then you think about this for a second. If you don't think you're in a transformational classroom, you get cops talking about poems they're reading. I mean, it's not this one of these soft moments, you know. It was like this kid read this poem about good timber. And, you know, and I'd never read that before, but it's written by, it's by Douglas Mallet. And if you're, and I'm not going to take the time to read it here on the podcast, but if you ever get a chance, just read that. It talks about good timber. And it, just the first paragraph says, the tree that never had to fight for sun and sky and air and light, but stood out in the open plain and always got its share of rain, never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. And I thought, I mean, you got a guy that's, you know, doing the last presentation and he's reading that. If you're going to be good at anything, you got to work at it. You've got to, you know, withstand the storms. You've got to fight for sunlight. You know, while everybody else is trying to knock you down, you know, you got to fight for that sunlight. You've got to fight for that rain that comes down. You know, and I thought, man, that is so dang true. So, you know, just a couple of moments like that were pretty, you know, pretty huge. So,
well, and I was just going to chime in, having been in three of those days of the class in Master Leadership, I am always amazed. This is probably about my third or fourth time sitting through that class. And to anyone that's out there in our listenership that has not experienced Master Leadership, it's an intimidating class the first day. But by the second or third day, you are like, wow. I mean, if you are not getting something out of it, then you're just not even trying. Some of the takeaways I had were, Dean talked about the self-reflective part that we're always trying to do in all of our classes. To me, Master Leadership is really where that forces the participant to connect their personal why of leadership to the class. And they start to see that in just some of the exercises that are assigned. You're literally forcing yourself to say, okay, well, what am I really trying to do here? What do I really want to accomplish as a leader? And so I just think it's so great. It was a great group of people up there. You talk about, I echo what you said, Dean. I actually had a conversation with Tim the other day. He was just blown away by the class. It was far better than he ever thought it could be. He's had great feedback from everyone that took the class. They want other people to experience it and bring it back to that area. So it's a home run.
Well, I mean, we had a great week. And one of the things that we try to do, we try to get you to realize that personal development, once you do that, it opens up an entirely different you. If you're tired of you and tired and bored with what you're doing and you don't really like where you're going, and if you got this kind of thing that you're trying to discover, then discover you. Take a personal growth look at yourself and look at where you are, look at where you're trying to go, and just start simple. One thing you got to realize is personal improvement is a process just like leadership is. And, you know, you got to realize there's not one pill that you take. There's a number of things that you've got to do to kind of make these things happen. And the first step of personal growth is just taking a moment to start reading stuff that you read in a transformational way, not a transactional. Some people always tell me, they say, man, I can't read that book. That book's so, I said, well, did you read it transactionally or transformationally? If you read it transactionally, it's just words on the page. But if you read it with the intent to share it, to give it away, to teach it, or to, you know, make sure that you do it yourself, it's an entirely different relationship with a book. And it doesn't have to be the book. It can be an article. It can be a short poem. It can be anything like that. Like that freaking poem that I just read. I read that thing and realized, man, you got to fight for sunlight. Sunlight's not automatic. Some people want to put you in the shade, you know, and that'll stunt your growth. And so you got to realize it's just part of it. So, you know, with that being said, JP, I'm going to give you some closing points here of what you want to say about that. And Kelly, I'm going to let you do the same, and then I'll close this podcast out.
Hey, listen, I think another important point on the personal growth journey is, you know, it's about the journey and there is no end. You know, there's no end. You're never going to get there. You're going to constantly be growing and getting better. So what that means is there's always room for improvement. There's always room to get better. You know, one thing I'll end with this, Dean, again, thanks to the folks up in Mount Juliet. Thanks to the folks in Hershey. Man, you can smell the chocolate in the air. Great town, good place to be. I gain a lot of weight if I live there permanently. But I'll leave with a quote that Misty left me. She shared this with the class up in Mount Juliet. Her pastor had shared it with her, and it resonates so true to me. If you think you're too big to do the small things, you're too small to do the big things.
Oh, man, I love that. Great quote. Great quote. Kelly?
Well, I'm the only non-law enforcement person, but I do have a master's in public administration like JP. So I do have a special heart for the law enforcement folks, just with my background in city administration. And I will say that every time I sit in one of Dean's classes or really any of our instructors' classes, I always learn something that is of value to me. Reading is a really big part of my life. And I don't know that I'm always transformational, but I do try to have at least one book that I'm reading at one time that's kind of for fun and for transformation and just to get me thinking internally about like just life and, you know, my mindset and all those kind of things. And I just encourage everybody out there to do the same. It's hard to find the time. And I think one of the things I would encourage everyone to do is find a way to habit stack. If you're not necessarily good at reading words on pages, download Audible and listen to a book while you're walking your dog or while you're getting your exercise in on the treadmill or whatever the case is in gym, at, you know, whatever you do for your own physical personal development. But in any case, I think it's been a really good kaboom moment for me to have that whole thought process of what is transformational and what is transactional, not only in my personal life, but also my professional life.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, these experiences, we love the classroom. We love being with folks and seeing them grow. So, you know, folks, if you want to take a look at our website, lhln.org, or if you don't just want to pass on the podcast, we ask you, if you've gotten anything out of today's podcast, please, please pass it on. And I'm going to leave today's podcast with one more little paragraph out of the Good Timber. And here's what it says. Good timber does not grow with ease. The stronger wind, the stronger trees. The further sky, the greater length. The more the storm, the more the strength. By sun and cold, by rain and snow, in trees and men, good timbers grow. And with that, folks, I'll leave you. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. And as we always say, until next time, I'm Dean Crisp.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Straight Talk on Leadership with Dean Crisp. If you would like to learn more about our live, in-person, virtual, or e-course offerings, please visit our website at www.lhln.org. Until next time, remember to put your leadership into action every day.